Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty, Washington. Today is Tuesday, August 1st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigeria's Labour Congress plans to embark on a nationwide protest tomorrow, Wednesday.
It's majorly to protest against the high-handedness of government and the insensitivity of government to the plight of the Nigerian people and workers in particular.
Burundi's parliament begins debate on the country's Hutu-Tutsi quota system. South Sudan's president is urged to create the political space to begin campaigning for next year's elections. A conversation with two fellows of the U.S.-backed Young African Leaders Initiative. An independent candidate takes his election case to Zimbabwe's constitutional court.
When you stop me from exercising my rights, the ability by an individual to make choices to be voted for in the office, this is within the realm of the Bill of Rights.
And some of your messages in honor of the 60th anniversary of VOA's English to Africa service. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. In Nigeria, the National Labour Congress plans to embark on a nationwide demonstration tomorrow's Wednesday to protest the high cost of living. This after accusing the government of not keeping its promise to come up with palliatives to cushion the loss of the fuel subsidy. But supporters of the government of the governing party accused the workers group of playing politics. Emmanuel Obuaja is the General Secretary of the National Labour Congress. He tells VOA's Peter Clotty that the government has yet to demonstrate sensitivity towards the workers.
Workers and Nigerian people will be going on a protest on the 2nd. And it's majorly to protest against the high-handedness of government and the insensitivity of government to the plight of the Nigerian people and workers in particular.
Why do you think the government has been high-handed in its relationship with public sector workers?
We had an MOU signed with the government in June that provided for an eight-week window to midwife some response that could have assuaged and brought some relief to workers and the people as a result of the impact of the so-called subsidy removal, which was just basically price hike in the cost of PMS in Nigeria, which you know is what really drives the Nigerian economy. The government became uninterested in the process and had basically not been available with key officers that would have helped drive the process that was provided for in that MOU. So we got frustrated. And while that was on, they went ahead further in the name of market forces to further increase the cost of PMS from 520, that was the initial position, to 617 naira. So clearly we're heading towards hell, and there was therefore the need to draw the attention of government very forcefully to the fact and impact of their policies, which they seem to be oblivious about.
But Emmanuel, some are suggesting that the government or the president was elected not too long ago. He is yet to officially name his new cabinet. People are questioning the timing of this protest, that at least the public sector workers should give the government a little bit of time to put it out together to address their needs. Your reaction to that?
People reasoning like that are reasoning along the line of people who prefer to put the cart before the horse. A president who knew he had no cabinet, who had no team, went and made a strong policy decision that had thrown the country upside down. He made a pronouncement that has impacted the lives of the citizens in a very terrible direction. So one would have expected that those reasoning like that to hold the president responsible for the impact of what he has done and not to blame hapless workers.
That was Emmanuel Obuaja, the General Secretary of the National Labour Congress of Nigeria. He was speaking to viewers Peter Clotty. Zimbabwe's Supreme Court is expected to take up the appeal of 12 would-be members of parliament from the opposition Citizens Coalition for Change. They had been denied participation in the August 23rd presidential and parliamentary elections because they allegedly filed their nomination papers late. Meanwhile, independent candidate Xavier Kasuku Kuwere has taken his case to the Constitutional Court after the Supreme Court upheld his disqualification on grounds that he had been out of the country for over 18 months. Kasuku Kuwere tells me that the Supreme Court infringed on his basic right to vote as a citizen.
Obviously, we have gone the next step, which is to appeal to the Constitutional Court, because at the center of the challenge is the effect of the decision by the judge on my rights. And once you talk about the individual's rights, then that becomes a constitutional matter. So we have proceeded to file our papers with the Constitutional Court, and we expect that this matter, which will certainly have implications beyond the individual, who is myself, but will affect many Zimbabweans in the diaspora.
When you said the court stepped on your rights as an individual, what sort of rights are you talking about?
Well, the disenfranchisement, when you stop me from exercising my rights, which is very much a part of the Bill of Rights, the ability by an individual to make choices, to be voted for in the office, this is within the realm of the Bill of Rights. And these are my specific rights. I'm a Zimbabwean, born and bred in Zimbabwe. I have not sought refugee status. I have not sought any other special status outside my country. So I have not ceased to be a Zimbabwean. And once you affect my right in that regard, then that's a breach of the constitutional rights of the individual.
I was wondering, let's assume the court does not allow you to participate or to run as a candidate. Is there any other way you can contribute to the process?
No, we will respect the decisions of the court. I'm a law-abiding citizen of Zimbabwe. Even if I disagree vehemently with some of the findings by the courts, I'll still respect the court's decisions. And we expect this court to make the right decisions.
You are not the only person. As I read through the papers, I see that the court has also disqualified a lot of people. So what does this mean in terms of democracy for Zimbabwe?
Well, it's very interesting that now it's the election without choices. You're now having a new phenomena, a new situation where the courts are now going beyond I'll call it judicial overreach. They are now becoming directly involved in an exercise that would rather be best left to the people to make a decision.
I was wondering, suppose you don't compete, will you support other candidates?
Well, we have said we'll cross the bridge when we get there. We are going to be looking and discussing with colleagues and those who are supporting me if it becomes clear that I have been blocked unfairly, though, that we will make a right decision at the right time.
Thank you so much. We'll keep in touch with you.
Thank you very much, James.
Xavier Kasuku Kuwere is the independent candidate in Zimbabwe's August 23rd elections. He was speaking with us from the capital, Harare. Some South Sudanese political analysts say President Salva Kiir should open the civic space for politicians to start campaigning for next year's elections. In his Martyrs' Day nationwide speech on Sunday, President Kiir repeated his commitment to hold elections in 2024. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
In his Martyrs Day televised message to the nation on Sunday, President Salva Kiir reminded South Sudanese to prepare for elections next year. The president said, quote, "We must work to exit from a perpetual transitional government status, and elections are the only way out of this. This is why I am urging all the political forces in the country to focus on using the current period provided by the roadmap to give our citizens the power to choose their leaders democratically next year," end of quote. Abraham Kuol Nyon, a professor of political science at the University of Juba, has a different opinion on President Kiir's call for elections. Nguyen says all indicators show that the country is not prepared to conduct elections. He says President Kiir's SPLM party is holding political rallies in preparations for the elections, while other parties are not allowed to campaign.
We need to see indeed that for us to be able to say whether there is a good political ground for all the political parties to exercise to sell out their parties in good spirit is still not the issue. Unless we see into it that all the political parties are given freedom of assembly, they are given freedom to mobilize voters, they are also given freedom to be able also to sell the agenda of their parties.
Nguyen says the focus should be on opening the civic space and allowing political parties to prepare for the elections.
The revitalized peace agreement has given a very good roadmap that could lead to the election. And that roadmap, if the leaders join themselves and agree on those milestones and work together as a team, despite all the obstacles that are available ahead of them, then the chances of us having election are extremely very high.
Boboya James, a policy analyst at the Juba-based Institute of Social Policy and Research, agrees with Nguyen. He says the environment in South Sudan is not favorable for conducting elections.
There's a lot that needs to be done, and those issues that are not being resolved create a lot of anxieties and worries in many, many South Sudanese, because they don't believe that there will be elections that are happening. Because if these people cannot be able to implement the peace agreement, how can they be able to run elections?
Last week, the SPLM-IO, a signatory of the 2018 peace agreement, called on the transitional government of national unity to implement the security arrangements, conduct a census, draft a permanent constitution, and improve transitional justice mechanisms to encourage the participation of the country's political leaders in the upcoming elections. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, August 1st. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Burundi's Senate has officially launched an evaluation of the ethnic quota system that gives Hutu and Tutsi, the two main Burundi ethnic groups, shared positions in government. This is the first time an attempt to evaluate the system has been made in more than 20 years. Moses Havyarimana reports.
The ethnic quota system is a fundamental part of the 2000 Arusha Agreement that ended more than a decade of civil war in Burundi. Issues related to power sharing between the ethnic groups remain sensitive in the country. Gaston Sindimo is Burundi's former vice president and is now a lawmaker from the Tutsi ethnic group.
You know, the ethnic quota system has been the only way to bring stability to Burundi. Why does the power in place want to change this system? We can ask ourselves other questions. Why SENA doesn't give us report about it? SENA must give us report. We can see how we can do with ethnic quota system.
The Senate is expected to conduct the evaluation meeting in every province where civil society, religious, political leaders and other interest groups will meet and provide their opinion about ethnic quota system, from which the Senate will submit a report to the president and decide on whether to maintain or scrap the ethnic quota system. Burundi's former president Domitien Ndayizeye, who is from the Hutu ethnic group, says that the ethnic quota system was designed for a limited period of time.
Mu byo twisunze harimo ibiharuro by'amoko n'ingingo zashizweho ariko nyuma y'igihe.
He says quotas were considered on demographic statistics of the ethnic groups and that these were decisions made for a specific period which could be later scrapped. He says that the aim was to share positions in all government offices and institutions, especially between the Tutsi and the Hutu, so that they get used to working together side by side. Sharing power meant that Hutus were entitled to fill 60% of the positions in the government offices, legislative assembly and the judiciary, while the Tutsis occupied the remaining 40%. In the army, it has a 50-50 split. But the decision did not include the Twa ethnic group, which was left marginalized, who are less than 1% of the population. The Batwa ethnic group say that they were marginalized in the whole process, including the Arusha Accords. Ahingejeje Alfred is a former East African Legislative Assembly lawmaker from the Twa ethnic group.
We can't understand why the Hutu are represented by 60%, the Tutsis on 40%. It means that Batwa, we have 0%. So as we are making the evaluation, I think for us it is a good time to see and to make some correction.
This is the first time after 23 years of signing the Arusha Accords that the government is evaluating whether to ban or maintain the ethnic quota system. The survey comes as part of the Article 289 of the 2018 Constitution that states that a period of 5 years is given to the Senate to decide to end or extend the arrangement. After a countrywide evaluation, the president of the chamber is expected to submit the report to the president for consideration. Moses Aviarimana for VOA Africa.
Members of the Young African Leaders Initiative, also known as YALI, are here in Washington, D.C. for the 2023 summit. Orien Itangishaka, co-host of VOA's Our Voices television show, spoke with two of the fellows, Gil Malong from South Africa and Risala Marev from Tanzania.
So firstly, let me introduce myself. My name is Gail from South Africa. So last year we came for an alumni enrichment. However, I usually say this, we call ourselves the pandemic cohort. So the year we were supposed to come to America, we didn't come. We did it virtually, and that was kind of devastating. However, we did get the opportunity last year to come to Washington and to also get the experience of interacting and working with the institutions. So it has been a very beautiful experience and an exciting one, because now having to be back here again, you know, as an alumna, having to see the other fellows, you know, the excitement, you know, and here to celebrate with them. This is an achievement. It's a big deal, you know, and I'm so excited looking at them, and I'm like, guys, this is a big deal. I you know, I'm so excited.
Yes. And Gail, you're going to be moderating some of the events here. Which one of them this year you were fortunate and privileged to be able to come back and to host? That's pretty interesting.
Thank you. Actually, I'm invited to MC the main events, the main sessions. So with the other alumni who are here, they also facilitating other sessions. So I'll be MCing and, you know, moderating only in the main hall where everybody is in. Yes.
Mm. Now we're going to turn around and see my sister here from Tanzania, not too far from Burundi. Welcome to Our Voices, and tell us a little bit about yourself and welcome to Washington.
Thank you so much. So I'll start by introducing myself. I'm Risala Moreth from Tanzania, and 2023 Mandela Fellow. I was placed in Notre Dame University in business track. So far, it has been really, really good. Back in my country, I work on STEM, inspiring and helping young girls to get back in schools and to create a safe environment in school.
And also here you do environmental things as well.
Yes, I work on climate change as well. Yeah, so I'm a climate change advocate.
So as you can hear, these ladies are involved in a lot of things. I know you, Gail, you also do women empowerment. And even with women empowerment, there are some blockage, there are some hindrances in the work that women do on the continent. What have been some of the challenges that you're meeting in your fields? And how have you been able to address it? And were you able to address that here at the trainings that you were able to get, especially you who were here for the trainings for 6 weeks, and we'll come back to you, Gail, as well.
Okay, thank you so much. So being here for 6 weeks, it has been a privilege, as I said previous. And back in my country, relating to the problems and the challenges and how I have learned through the YALI program, I would say the big challenge I've seen in my country, we have a problem of gender-based violence, which have been hindering so much of the girls, who they don't get back to school or they don't feel safe to school, and then they decide to drop out of the schools. That has been a big challenge. But coming to YALI, it has really enlightened me, because I met with some fellows who are doing the same careers in their countries, and we have networked, and we have also started to work on some strategies, and we have already agreed to network and work with some platforms that other fellows have created in their countries and to adapt them in my country and try to see if they will help. So I'm looking forward to get back and use the platforms and work with these girls to make sure they are staying in school. On climate change, I would say people are still not aware on human activities that are really contributing to climate change. So coming to Yali, I think I've learned on how I can use the digital marketing or the e-platforms to ensure that many people are reached to make sure they are getting awareness on climate change and how the daily human activities are affecting the earth we are living on and how to work on them.
That's really great, Rasila. You're now really reinventing the wheel. You're looking at what other people are doing elsewhere on the continent. Now, for you, Gail, you doing women empowerment work. There's
Gail Malone from South Africa and Risala Marav from Tanzania, two fellows of the Young African Leaders Initiative, also known as YALI. They spoke with Orion Itagishaka, co-host of Viewers Our Voices television program. It is time now for us to bring you information about VOA English to Africa's 60th anniversary, which is this Friday, August 4th. You, the listeners, have been sending us your appreciation and suggestions about our programs. Here is Daybreak Africa reporter Marie Ojiambo for a reflection of her time here with English to Africa.
With the help of affiliate stations in Kenya, the Voice of America reaches wide scope of audience, the young and the adults, from the cities to the remote villages countrywide. The affiliate stations normally transmit the Voice of America's news immediately after the Kenyan local news. I fell in love with the bulletin because it was giving its audience extensive news. And given it comes from most African countries, it feels good to know the status of other countries politically, economically, and other human interest stories that transpired across the world. As I undertook my journey of becoming a journalist, I really wish that one day I find myself working for an international media house. And my dream came to pass in 2018 when I was contracted to correspond for Daybreak Africa. It was a turning point for me. I love the work culture, the understanding editors and the fellow reporters. It's interesting that I talk to people I have never met in person, and the communication is ever great and professional. Having worked in other media houses in Kenya, I can say that I enjoy and love working for VOA. And on that note, I still have my first ever story that aired on Daybreak Africa in May 2018. It was about Kenya's Labor Day. Listen to this.
The Labor Cabinet Secretary Kuriatani says the increment tape was arrived at following the rate of inflation standing at 4.5 in Kenya this year.
The country recorded a loss of 1,100,000 man-hours.
And you can actually tell the difference between then and now. The growth in voicing and articulation is evident. VOA is a place for growth for journalists and audience gets the best from our programs. Happy 60th anniversary, VOA's English to Africa service.
Please keep sending us your voice and text messages about our 60th anniversary to this WhatsApp number, +1 202 258 3076. Once again, +1 202 258 3076. And that is it for this Tuesday, August 1st edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your morning with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I am James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have an amazing Tuesday.